Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Faint step. Oh, there's a faint from Jake.
Ooh. Caught him. Oh my God.
Down.
Lord have mercy. Oh, Jesus. Oh, Lord.
Bruh. New York strip steak?
Ooh. This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang.
Favorite athletic writer.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
I'm telling you, man, I would whip Floyd Mayweather's ass.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show podcast, Basket Buds edition. It's Monday, and that means we're talking stuff Buds would talk about, huh? This isn't a good intro, but we're going to roll with it. I'm Zach Harper. We got Mo Dakiel. We got Dave DeFore. We got Trevon Edwards. We got Jay King. And this week on Buds, we're going over free agency. We're going over some of the key moments of this coming season. But first and foremost, Nate Robinson got knocked the fuck out by a YouTuber. And so, little background on this weekend is Friday night, Amin Al-Hassan and I were doing our radio show on Mad Dog Sports Radio. And we had looked at, like, pictures of Nate in training. And Nate was ripped, right? Because Nate is probably always ripped. I think he's been ripped since he was four. But he was just cut. And we're like, okay. Like, he's in great shape. This is going to be fine. And I was like, well, all right. I know Jake Paul has fought before. So let me see what happened last time. So I went on the old YouTube. And I saw, and he fought another YouTuber, like, in January. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh, he's a horrible boxer. Like, even though he won the fight, I was like, this is terrible. Like, this is terrible. This other YouTuber missed so many opportunities to...
Wait, did like, research on the Jake Paul-Nate Robinson fight?
Yeah, man. Because we were trying to figure out, like, what... Because Jake Paul was favored. And we're like, okay, hold on. Why is Jake Paul favored, right? Turns out, we found out why last night. But, so I started watching this fight, and I was like, okay, he's terrible. He's like what I would expect him to be. Like, he's, you know, he's got his hands up and everything, but there's just so many openings and all this shit. So, all right, it's going to be brutal for him. And then I would say about 15 seconds into the Nate Robinson, Jake Paul fight, I thought, oh no, Nate does not know how to box. And comedian Mike Malloy, tweeted after, because they had said during the broadcast that, you know, Nate's been training for 6 days a week for this boxing match. And Mike asked, since when? Monday? Like, right. Because it did not go well. So, Trey, Nate, I think a lot of us wanted to see him beat up a YouTuber. And he, like, I don't... That first knockdown, he got punched sort of in the back of the head, sort of in the ear. They said it was a legal punch. That thing looked real back of the head to me. So I didn't think it was legal, but whatever. But I, at first I thought, oh, he's just kind of like, he still had his bell rung because of that first punch, that first knockdown. But it turns out he just isn't a boxer, which is fine.
First of all, listen to the kids, bro. The kids know who Jake Paul and Logan Paul are. They know what's up. Listen to the kids. They on YouTube and making these dudes famous. But yeah, Zach, like, what people fail to realize is that, for one, black people are not always just going to beat up white people. It just don't work that way. And then secondly, if you're good at a street fight, doesn't mean you're going to be good in a boxing ring.
And, are you saying, right, Nate Robinson is good at a street fight?
He's not good in the boxing ring.
I would like to think Nate has hands outside of the boxing ring. I think if any of us got in a ring for 3 minutes, that means with conditioning and training, I think we would fare okay. You can't. That was a great lesson to be taught to America. That's like the guys that just talk stuff on the couch and say they could do something. Well, he jumped in the ring, and like Zach said, the commentator said he had been training for about 6 days a week or whatever it was. There's guys preparing for fights for a year, 9 months, etc., to get ready for that particular moment. And Nate was fighting pretty much. He was aggressive, like as if he was slap boxing or a street fight, and was all open and aggressive. And only thing that Paul had to do was step back, and it was wide open for the punch.
Yeah, use his size, use his reach, and yeah, it was.
And once he clunked him, he had two clean hits, and it was he dropped him each time.
Paul, I mean, it was
Paul looked like a guy who's been learning to box.
Right. I mean, like, you look at the hits. I mean, Paul hits him with an uppercut and then a hook. Like, it was just kind of a setup. And when you watch Nate, he's coming in, he's throwing a wild swing and then
Nate
punching.
Looked like he was trying to tackle him, Mo.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's all he's it was. Back it was, you it, dub. It was a wild swing and then, okay, clinch, you know, because he's too close at that point. It was completely out of control. And, you know, when they say he's been training, I'm like, who's training him?
Yeah, there was a point where the referee stops them from clinching. He's like, you guys want to have a boxing match? And my thought was like, do you know who you're looking at right now? Neither of these guys are boxers.
Well, to be fair, Paul has been like boxing amateurly.
Jake Paul's a boxer,
for 2 years. He's boxed for 2 years. That's why he felt really confident, and that's why the stakes were really high on him on the gambling side. But the thing is, everybody's just like, I think Nate Robinson's kind of physically gifted in that situation, and maybe skill will win in this situation, but not in boxing, bro.
Guys, technique, man. Jake Paul is more of a boxer than Nate Robinson, but he's not a boxer.
There you go. No, I'm not giving him that.
I think he's about like a club boxer level boxer. Like, he's not that bad. He's not.
He's atrocious.
No, he's not that bad. He's a lot better than he was in that
I'm
first fight.
I'm ready for his next match, though.
Yeah. But he wasn't fighting a real fight either. And so, I mean, you like Mo just said, he set him up for that knockout, and Nate Robinson did everything he could to help him.
I was shocked, giving, though.
As far as all the conditioning goes, man,
An excessive amount of credit to Jake Paul here.
He beat him. Plain and simple.
Of course he beat him, but neither of them are boxers. Like, no, he's not a club-level boxer.
Jake Paul is not a bad boxer, man.
He's not a bad boxer, close to an adequate boxer.
I'm ready to give Jake Paul some credit, because Nate Robinson...
You're going to give Jake Paul credit? You still won't give the Miami Heat credit?
Jake Paul actually knocked somebody out. The Miami Heat, they were the ones who got knocked out by the Los Angeles Lakers. Nate Robinson is one of the most impressive athletes pound for pound. Like, seriously, he's ridiculous. He was an incredible football player in college. He could have played in the NFL. He then, at 5'8" or whatever he is, was a slam dunk champion. He is literally one of the best athletes the world has ever seen. And Jake Paul knocked him the fuck out. It's time to put some respect on Jake Paul's name.
I'm not going to go that far, but I will say this. Shouts to Nate Robinson getting in the ring, because it takes a lot of courage to get your ass beat in front of America. And shouts to him being a good sport.
Did he need money that badly?
No. It was more so the things that Jake Paul was saying about his kids, you know, and it was a pride thing after that. And I think that messed up his strategy, too, because he wanted to feel like he can aggressively punk this guy. And, you know, the guy just sidestepped and just was like, watch out. Bop. But let's talk about the memes. I haven't seen memes or any of the internet be fun like this since Pacquiao.
The memes were brutal.
The one I saw this morning, the one where it was like, it was the side by side of Jake Paul and Muhammad Ali, and someone said, like,
that was racist.
This is gonna be up in every white barbershop. Like, that one, I lost it.
The wicked,
they are gonna
the
tell
wicked
them,
witch
tell
one.
Their kids. Oh yeah, and the Lion King too.
The Simba one, asking him to get up was too much for me, man. I couldn't handle it.
Oh man.
The best was Nick Young getting involved, man. Like, Nick Young coming out of left field.
Nick Young, please relax, bro. Don't do it. Please don't.
Well, there were people coming to Nate's aid like he was the victim of a crime. And, you know.
I mean, damn, he just got murdered.
Yeah, he just got knocked out.
The winner of the night was Snoop Dogg.
You know, before that fight, I asked on Twitter. I was like, has Nate ever boxed before? Because if you've never been punched in the face... it's different. Like, it's weird
to
get
punched
in the face.
I'm sure he's been punched in the face before. He's a short guy.
But not like you get punched in a fight, right? Like in a boxing match. And it's just a totally different experience when you take a couple shots and your eyes start to water the first time. It's just, you know, it's different.
Dave, have you ever boxed?
Yeah, I used to box.
When did you box?
I boxed as a kid, and then I worked for the State Athletic Commission in Virginia.
I love the idea of a kid fight club.
Oh, man.
I love the idea.
You know, the cushion, there's not like, headgear doesn't really cushion anything. Like, it still hurts like a motherfucker to get punched in the face. And I know my eyes water when I get hit in the nose and not when I get hit in the forehead. So I know to dip my head a little bit. Those are the types of things that, like, if you've just never done it before, you don't know.
To be fair, he dipped his head, I think, 3 times as it dipped into the mat.
But I mean, I've seen guys like working for the Virginia Athletic Commission. You have to put on the rough and rowdy fights. Like, those are sanctioned by the state. So we would be there. And so you would see what would happen when you'd have guys who had done a little bit of boxing and the guys who were just like, well, I'm tough or I'm an athlete. And those guys got beat every single time by the guys who had done some boxing. So I wasn't shocked to see that.
Jake Paul changed my mind last night. I swear to God, I walked next to Floyd Mayweather once. He used to come to Celtics games because Isaiah Thomas was his good friend. And I walked next to him. I was like, yo, I think I could beat Floyd Mayweather's ass. This dude is tiny.
No, Jay.
I swear to God, if you stood
even
next,
before
if
watching
you stood
this,
next
even
to
before
Floyd
watching
Mayweather,
this, no, yeah, no, no. Even before watching last night's fight, you should never, ever have
Jake
that.
Jake Paul convinced me I could not beat Floyd Mayweather's ass.
No, this isn't news to anybody, Jay.
Yeah, this isn't like, we're not shocked like you that you.
Yeah, like this isn't a revelation to anybody.
I'm more shocked.
But yourself.
I'm just shocked that you had the thought that you could beat his ass. I'm actually more shocked by that, Jay.
If you stood next to him, he is tiny.
Jay, like, I've seen him. He comes to Laker games all the time.
He's tiny, man.
Like, and he would give you the business.
Yeah, I realize that now. Jake Paul opened my eyes.
The worst boxer or the best boxers in the world can't land a punch on Floyd Mayweather. What part of you makes you think you can?
But he fights dudes his own size. I'm a beast.
Oh my God. Jay, no,
I've seen you manage
no,
a shot
Jay,
clock. I'm not
Jay.
So sure, Jay, but we got to move on to free agency.
Oh my God, Jay. Now I'm just concerned Jay's going to get his ass beat someday just for this kind of stupid stuff.
If Floyd's listening,
we'll you got one more in you.
Forget Floyd, man. Get the 10th guy on the,
look,
the
I'd
the
like
boxing
to see Jay,
team.
I'd like to see Jay King try to fight Tim Floyd, let alone Floyd Mayweather.
I think Jay King would land a single punch. Floyd be rolling those shoulders all day until you fell asleep.
If I landed one punch, it's over.
No.
No, I promise
but
it wouldn't
Jake
be.
Paul showed me
this
I
guy
won't.
Gets punched and, for and, a living.
And more importantly, Jay, by the time you throw a punch and bring your hand back, he's already hit you 3 times.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, I would whip Floyd Mayweather's ass.
It's funny, Mo. That's actually the thing,
wait
right?
a second. Wait, hold on, Dave, before you make a very excellent point. I just need us to zero in on the fact that Jake Paul opened up Jay's eyes about 90 seconds ago that he couldn't beat Floyd Mayweather in a fight, and now he's saying he would whoop his ass again.
Yeah, but I didn't believe it when I said that. I know now that he would get me.
Oh. So now it's clear.
Okay. Jake Paul opened my eyes. He taught
are there,
me a
are there other okay. are there so do well, you think you can take Pacquiao? Like, are there other boxers you think you can take? No,
yeah,
I'm sorry. I know we need to get the free agency, but now like, I'm just shocked. Now I just
we don't
need,
mean taking
I'm
a
curious.
Fight. I'm saying like take to lunch.
Who's the smallest?
I don't think like taking a fight is going to happen.
Who's the smallest boxer you think that you couldn't beat? Is it Floyd now or is it somebody else?
I mean, as my brothers pointed out when I tried to tell them this, they were like, so you think you would whip Conor McGregor's ass too? And I was like, yeah, you know what?
Oh, boy. Oh, God.
What is happening right now?
Wow. Okay, Jay. Have you ever boxed?
Nah.
Mo has. No,
okay.
See, if I had boxed, I'd know how hard it is. But that's I haven't yes. boxed, so now I can just talk reckless.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Talk reckless. It's okay. Yeah.
Guys. Go ahead.
Well, no. So Mo was making a good point. Like the counter punching is really where, like, that's where you like anybody can throw a punch, but the counter punching is where Jake Paul really, like, you could see where he'd been working. And that was how he caught him. And so, yeah, that's the stuff that people don't think about. It's like this this young lady who was kicking field goal or kicking kickoffs yesterday. If you haven't kicked a ball off a tee, and which a lot of people haven't, or at least in a very long time, in particular the people watching this college football game yesterday, you just don't realize how difficult it is to do. I suck at it. I wouldn't want to be up there doing that. And so she kicks a squib kick. I don't know if you guys saw it, and everyone has commentary. But this Jake Paul thing, I think it's just going to make it worse. I mean, we all saw all the other NBA players who wanted to jump in. I guess Aaron Foster wants to fight Jake Paul now. It's going
to
be funny.
Turner wants to.
Yeah, he's going to make a lot of money off this.
This is comedy.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And maybe one day we'll get that Jake Paul, Jay King throwdown.
I mean, I think we kind of got to make that happen at this point.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of making horrible decisions, let's get to free agency, guys. Overall, we know the Lakers, like, dominated free agency, right? Dominated the offseason. And we know Portland did a great job as well. I want to get into, like, other teams we think maybe don't have a plan, right? Or maybe they do have a plan. It's just not completely evident. And, Jay, I do want to actually start with the Celtics, who they lose Gordon Hayward. They couldn't figure out a sign and trade. They lose Gordon Hayward for nothing. And they pick up Tristan Thompson, which is great. They pick up Jeff Teague, which is whatever. They give Jason Tatum the max deal. But what do you think the plan is? Oh, they also lost Brad Wanamaker, which is a big deal. What do you think the plan is for the Celtics moving forward? Like, how do they add more to this team?
I mean, the plan has to be surrounding Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown with as much talent as possible over the long run. And I mean, Gordon Hayward leaving kind of pivoted for them. Like, they've been reluctant to pivot from one timeline to the next. They've kind of been trying to run two timelines at the same time since they had Kyrie Irving and Al Horford and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And now I think it's very clear that the two franchise cornerstones are Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And you've got to, over the long run, like, try to keep those guys happy. They're on the clock now. Like, 5 years from now, Jason Tatum will be in free agency. And I know it, people are going to say that it's a long way away, but NBA life moves fast, man. And you can squander opportunities. And I think the Celtics have squandered some opportunities. They've obviously let three free agents go in Kyrie Irving and Al Horford and Gordon Hayward for nothing. And every one of those guys had different circumstances, and it was like you could excuse it all. But at the same time, it's like they had an abundance of riches, and now they still have a very good team. But I just think it's going to be harder now that all the picks from Brooklyn are gone and all the stable of assets is down to like being a really good team that's going to need some luck to become like a title favorite at some point in the future.
That's a sneaky thing about losing Hayward for nothing, is that they didn't recoup any extra assets. They didn't get any trade exceptions. They didn't get,
they could get a trade exception. That, I don't think that's like totally out of the picture right now.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that they hadn't made a decision on that yet. But hopefully they can get that, because it's another team-building tool that they just don't have access to otherwise. And that's the thing about them losing Kyrie and Al and Gordon for nothing. Is that just a philosophical thing at this point where they're just not willing to pull the plug early?
I think, well, with Kyrie, everything just went sour so quickly.
Right.
And it was like everything was perfect. He declared he was coming back if the Celtics fans would have him. And then like 3 months later, he had one foot out the door, you know? So that, well, that was...
Would they? And you know? And maybe they didn't want him.
And maybe that's their fault for, you know, putting their chips into a guy who's pretty unreliable. And I think there's definitely an issue with that. But like they've had big dreams. They wanted to, you know, go out and try to acquire Anthony Davis. Obviously that never happened. They wanted to, you know, be put together as kind of a super team. And at one point it looked like they had enough assets to maybe do that. They're not a super team. And that's pretty clear. But they still do have a lot of talent and they still have young guys they can build around. But it's just they don't have the abundance of riches that they looked like they could have had a couple years ago.
I mean, they're the average team now in the sense of asset building and things like that. Before, they had so many assets, you felt like eventually they're going to make this massive move, which never really came. But you know, now they're just back to the normal level that everybody else is for the most part, you know, except for the teams that gave away their entire drafts over the next few years for superstars. Like, this is the thing that they're now playing on the same playing field as most people, whereas before they were up a notch and they just didn't take advantage of it.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, like, Danny Ainge deserves credit for putting that together. Like, as my brother likes to say, like, part of being a good GM is being able to take as many swings as possible. And Danny gave himself a lot of swings, but he doesn't have as many swings anymore. And that's the fact of the matter. Like, so many teams would like to be where they are, but it's just, it's going to be harder than people thought to kind of build the title favorite that they wanted to build, or that they've wanted to build this whole time.
I'm curious how much of this is like them not being in the mix for Anthony Davis back when he wanted out, right? Because it did, maybe I'm wrong on that, but it did feel like that was their goal. Like, hey, man, when Anthony Davis becomes available, we're going to go get him. And then it turned out, it was like, yeah, he just wants to be a Laker. Like, that's not really a thing. Like, he just wants to be a Laker.
Well, he very specifically did not want to be a Celtic, too.
Yeah. And so, and like, I wonder how much of that was a gamble on, you know, just a failed gamble on, like, because they just kept building this. This treasure chest of like assets and things to move and everything. And then all of a sudden it was like, it's just not there anymore.
Yeah. And I think like if things had stayed good with them and Kyrie, like maybe they would have been where Kyrie and Kevin Durant would have wanted to team up. Cause obviously those guys wanted to play together and they engineered their way to play together. And maybe it could have been in Boston, but when everything went wrong with Kyrie, like, That obviously impacted Al Horford's decision, and maybe the Celtics dodged a bullet there because Al's a little older and probably won't be worth his contract over the next 3 years. But just to lose all three of those guys for nothing is tough.
Is there a problem, Jay? Like, that's three guys that they've lost for essentially nothing. Maybe the trade exception for Hayward comes through, but you know, after making a big deal of when they signed Horford, it was like, wow, we finally were able to lure a big free agent. And now you're not able to keep those guys. Like, that's kind of a little bit of a eyebrow raise for me, too, where I'm a little bit like, what's going on? We get the Kyrie reasons. But, yeah, like, these other guys kind of just willing to just bounce. I think
we gave Danny Ainge too much credit, man.
I'm with that trade.
Like, mm-hmm. I think for what he's done and everybody was like, what is the Brooklyn trade? Ever since that, like, and, you know, moving past that, you know, he's not who he says he is, you know, like, they've swung and missed. Like, I do like the development in that, you know, Tatum and Brown are the face, but, you know, all the other moves that they made, I didn't see them as the biggest winners out of these situations. So, it falls back on Ainge and, you know, obviously they're not a bad team and, you know, they're reaching where they want to reach, but it's also to a point of you know, the fans want championships, and that's a storied franchise known for championships. So when is Ainge going to deliver that? You know what I mean? And I think with the pieces that they have, I mean, I like with the Thompson signing and, you know, letting guys, a couple guys walk, or the guys that they couldn't deliver, that's an issue.
Well, and Trey, I wonder how much of that is, I wonder what the Isaiah Thomas thing did, because everyone knows it's a business, and you know, I think everyone would have kind of made the same move in terms of like front office stuff, but Isaiah seems to be so well liked that, and I'm not saying like it was like, oh, they did Isaiah dirty, I'm never going to be a Celtic or anything like that, but I do think that stuff affects how people view the organization and trust in the organization, and it's a good organization, right? But I wonder how much the Isaiah Thomas stuff affected that perception.
Oh, it affected so much. You know what I mean? Because again, the thing about IT, he's one of the most likable guys in the league as far as when it comes to the players, you know, and the fact that he's in a situation where he probably won't even get a camp invite, it just shows enough of what it is. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a guy that was an all-star, a guy that played hurt, a guy that, you know, during the time of, you know, his sister's death, he's played and won games, like won big games for them, only for the organization to, you know, trade him off or kind of like banish him away for other goods, you know, in a scenario instead of taking care of their own. Because it's rare. So I'm not mad at guys when they go sign with other teams, because there's no true loyalty in the scenario, you know, and Boston's truly showed that. You know what I mean? Like, obviously the guys that they've let go or they traded off haven't been like, you know, become something big elsewhere, but they also didn't help Boston elevate to another level. You know what I'm saying? That just kind of notched up, you know? So go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, the Isaiah Thomas thing is just funny. Like, they traded him for a better player. And I get that, you know, the whole contract thing that didn't come to fruition for him. But at the end of the day, guys get traded all the time. I don't get why people would hold that against the organization. And
I don't think the organization, Dave, put Isaiah's health.
Oh, for sure.
At the forefront. And I think when you do that, it looks like, hey, we use this dude and then we shipped him off for someone else. Like, I'm with you. They traded for a better player. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that move. They gave up real assets and a good player to do it, but it looked like they had just used Isaiah when he was, you know, when his hip goes bad, and they were like, oh, we're still going to use him, and now we discard him.
The organization is damned if they do, and they're damned if they don't, right? Like, the option ultimately rests with the player. Like, you can play through this injury or not. I mean, do we want the teams? I mean,
it gets back into the Kevin Durant decision, okay, though, in the finals, right, where it's like, I think there are times you've got to keep a dude from himself, especially when it's an Achilles or a hip.
But are the players empowered or not? You know what I'm saying? Like, do the teams need to protect them? Well, if so, then should the teams also have protections for themselves? You know, when the players are trying to force themselves to other teams and stuff like that. So
they do.
I mean, I think if a guy wants to play hurt, now I'm against it personally, but you got to give them the choice to do it. And I think they did.
But it goes further than that, than just the IT stuff. I know that was the crescendo, but it's the number of times we hear about, you know, they're building a treasure trove of assets so that they can trade for Anthony Davis. Like, those guys hear that they're going to be involved in trades for 2 years. You know, it's the view that some players feel like they're coming in there and they're going to be in. Well, it's different, because in the sense of, this is the front office telling you, like, yo, you're going to be traded at some point for the superstar. Like, we're just developing you so that we can get to that next level. And that's fine. And every team's going to do that in that regards. And you're right. Kyrie was a better player than IT. You make that trade, I think, 10 out of 10 times. But it's the notion of, it constantly keeps happening in Boston, where you just keep hearing about Danny comes out and how we almost made this trade, we almost made that trade. And the players there are thinking, like, wow, like, there really is no loyalty here. And there's not a lot of loyalty in any organization, but there's a level of that feeling, I think, where more of that comes from Boston, just because you always kind of just hear that, like, they're looking to make this next move. You know, you always hear about the next move for them, and that creates tension within the locker room for guys. I mean, there's talk of every year Marcus Smart's going to get traded, right? Like, there's always, or should they trade him or whatnot, and things like that. So I think it's just kind of building up to all that. And I think the Isaiah Thomas thing was the tipping point.
I also think that I think that on the idea of, like, player empowerment and players should be able to play through injuries if they want, like, We've seen that with the Achilles and with the hip. Mm-hmm. Dudes flat out don't come back, right? Rare that a dude comes back. And so I think those are the affected areas. I think it's on the teams to be like, hey, man, like, no, we are going to value your future and we're going to live to fight another day. Because those injuries are debilitating. Like those injuries, that hip injury cost Isaiah Thomas probably $200 million.
Yeah, a lot of money. No, right. I'm with you. I'm with you just from a personal perspective, right? But I think it's also a good
business practice, though.
I think it is for the teams, but for the players, oftentimes it's not. I mean, IT performed while hurt. And I think that he just thought everything was going to be fine and it was worth the risk. Clearly, we know better in hindsight. But it's hard. I mean, I can understand as an organization it being hard to tell a guy, hey, you just can't play, even when you feel like you can.
But this isn't to like belittle the players or whatever, but like, right. Isn't that where it's the organization's job to be the adult in the room? Of like, hip injury. No, you're not playing.
Yeah.
We know you can. We know we value you're a long-term part of our plan instead of looking like you've used the player. Mm-hmm. And now let's send them off.
Yeah. Cause that is how it came across with IT.
This is a super complicated discussion, especially when it relates to IT, because if you remember that playoff run when he ended up doing further damage to the hip, his sister passed away the day before the playoffs.
For sure.
And he has said since that he would not change that because he wanted to play for his sister and he wanted to keep going no matter what. And so he said that since, like, after all the bad stuff happened with his hip, he has said that. And so I think – like it's a really complicated discussion with him and how the Celtics handled it and how they should have handled it. And I mean, in retrospect, knowing what we know now, which is that Isaiah's never looked even close to the same and that, you know, he could be out of the league, that he doesn't have a contract right now. It looks like he definitely should have sat out. But at the time, like, number one, he wanted to do it for his sister. And number two, he was playing incredibly well. And I think he wanted to keep that going. But obviously, yeah, like it hasn't worked out well. And it definitely looks bad on the Celtics for sure.
Yeah. But here's the thing, Jay, and we can move on to another team after this. But like, you're right. His sister passed away and he went out and played, you know, the next day. Right. And I'm sure he wouldn't change that moment. He played 14 games after that game on a bad hip. And it's not like we evaluate before the playoffs and it's good. Like, they're evaluating that thing every single day. That's my issue with it. Like, it's not he played in this game, so he's got to play in the rest of them. Like, and granted, he had one of those games, he dropped, what, 50-something?
Yeah.
On the Wizards, yeah. Right? Like, he played incredible, but it's a hip injury. Like, I look at that, I'm like, yo, it's a hip injury. That's the biggest killer for NBA players' careers is when the hips go. And if that happened, and I just think it was negligent. But I do. And I think that, you know, to Trey's point, like, because everyone seems to love Isaiah, like, that's gonna resonate tougher than it happening to a lot of guys.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. I mean, listen, just Anthony Davis was his dad that pointed that out publicly. I mean, he's the only person maybe that said it publicly, but that's stuff that people talk about.
Yeah. What about the Rockets? We know that their plan blew up in their face, but now do we they're just going to roll? Well, the plan was get James Harden MVP.
I think they stand pat, right? They don't trade their guys. I think they did a decent job bringing in, you know, a non-guaranteed Boogie Cousins. You got Christian Wood, who everybody's been gushing over. And just try it out. I mean, no expectations in this situation. I mean, how everybody's viewing it, they see the Lakers as the repeat or no one contending with the Lakers outside of the Brooklyn Nets. And it shouldn't be no pressure from the Rockets in this scenario. Now, if guys start, you know, throwing tantrums and taking shots media-wise, then it becomes an issue. But, like, they have all the leverage in the world in this scenario. I'm not trading James Harden if he wants out. Like, I mean, no matter what he says or what his camp says, you know what I mean? I have all the leverage and I'm only going to listen to deals that works best for me, you know, but I'm not sure how Tillman's going to operate this scenario or the new general manager. moving forward, because you still have pieces that are, you know, if you're thinking about like how Presti's handling the scenario and getting and taking care of for the future, you don't want to get burned in a scenario and just give in because you felt like Harden gave you all what he can do and now let's reward him. It doesn't work that way, even though this is a players' league. They need to stand pat and say, so, good luck with that. Like, you're still on contract with us.
Basically, like, listen, you're going to play. We know you like to play.
It's not football. You're not going to go just say, all right, I'm going to go take a month off. Like, you there's like no money. Holdouts. Yeah. You're just going to hoop. Who cares if you're not happy? Oh, well. You know what I mean? Like, it is what it is. You know, like, obviously, for selfish purposes, like, I would like to see James and Russ in a different scenario, but. You know, from if I'm the team's governor, you know, I'm not moving those dudes.
Has that worked for anybody, though?
What?
Like, has any franchise, and I'm legitimately asking a question, has any franchise, like, salvaged a situation where a superstar wanted out and then ended up being happy in that situation over the long term?
Kobe and the Lakers.
Yeah, Kobe's the only one that I can think of, right?
But, you know, but even if it's not a long-term success story, Jay. Like, the thing is, you know, and Trey's right, the Rockets have all the leverage. Like, okay, he wants to go play for the Nets. The Nets don't have a package that's going to move them. If they're going to move Harden, they want young guys, they want draft picks, all that stuff. I mean, half of their draft picks are going to Oklahoma City for Russ. So, you know, they want to kind of replenish that cupboard a bit. And I just think that's the big thing, is nobody really was willing to put together the massive offer for James Harden, and he was kind of limiting it, saying, I only want to go to Brooklyn. I think there was a run a little bit where maybe Philly because of Daryl Morey, but if he's not going to put Simmons on the board, I doubt that trade's ever going to happen. So I think it's just one of those instances where they're just like, hey, let's just play it out a year. Like, I honestly think this is Harden's last year with the Rockets. I think they'll play out this whole season. I think they'd like to move Russ if they could find a deal that makes sense, but I don't know if there's much of a market to meet Russ's request, you know. I think
if you're Orlando or Charlotte or the Knicks, go get him.
Yes. Yes.
Go get him. What are you doing?
Like, be entertaining.
Russ is good. Russ is nobody I would want to lead my team to a title, but go be like Russ. Like, Tom Thibodeau wants to win games. Russ can win you games.
They can make the playoffs. Yep. I think so. Wait, no, he's going to put them at least in the play-in game.
Yeah, right? You're right. I think they could get to the 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about right. Like, for me, actually, I like what the Knicks are doing, which is basically not doing anything stupid. And even going to get Russ is, you know, and giving up a bunch of assets to try to get him and be entertaining.
What assets? Whatever,
just like future draft picks.
Do you have to give up anything that's likely to convey as a first round pick for Russ?
I don't think so.
You're taking on that massive deal.
Yeah.
See that, like, that's why
I don't think this is Russ.
At the same time, you're not getting anything really back either. Because look, Russ with Thibodeau, come on, he's going to get his body run into the ground and he won't make it the whole season.
See that?
You know, I'm with you on Orlando. I'm with you on Charlotte. Go be exciting and whatnot. I like what the Knicks are doing. Just saying, hey, we're going to be bad. So far, I mean, listen, this could change in like 20 minutes.
Mo just wants the Knicks to not be awful, I think.
I want the Knicks to build.
I want long-term success for the Knicks. It's been just, you know, every time they get a guy, a new front office guy, they go make a splashy move or something like that, and it always blows up in their face. They just never really build anything. I'd like them to build.
Right, but we got to stop pretending, or not us, we're not pretending, but they've got to stop pretending that, like, you're going to go be in the mix for those free agents. Those huge free agents. Like, they're not. They're not. So go trade for a dude.
Build through the draft is really my thing. Just build through the draft and then let's see how it kind of comes together. Because, like, you know, the Lakers were constantly trying to do that, right? Swinging for the fences for big names. We're striking out in free agency. Didn't even get a meeting with Kevin Durant during the cap spike year, you know, and all of that stuff. It was like an embarrassment for them. They loaded up on draft picks. They were bad. They got young talent that, you know, had some sort of value, and then they were able to flip that for AD. I think that's kind of what's going to happen for the Knicks if they play it the right way.
You actually think that's going to happen for the Knicks?
At some point, a star is going to want to play there in New York.
If they do it right.
The day after James Dolan sells the team.
I mean, just think about
that's
this.
That's certainly possible.
Just think about where we're at with this, right? Like, we are all just kind of happy to watch the Knicks make a couple of smart, low dollar value, short year signings, pick up a couple of second round picks, and we're all just like, oh, wow, it's a new Knicks regime doing basic stuff.
It's shocking.
I mean, so I think that, you know, clearly they have a lot of rehabilitation of their image to do, but this was a good start. They've not done anything silly, and that's such a huge improvement for this team.
Can't wait till they traded for John Wall tomorrow.
All right. I'm kind of talking myself into Pelicans.
Oh. Interesting.
Because I was ready to punt on them once they got rid of Drew. And, you know, I'm not the biggest Eric Bledsoe guy, but they got Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe replacing Derek Favors and Drew Holiday. It's a downgrade at point guard, but that's a big upgrade at center.
I like the kid, Kira Lewis, though. Like,
yeah, I like him too, but like him as a backup to Bled, like that's a nice combination. And plus Lonzo pushing the ball, like Trey, that's a nice combination.
Yeah, no, they got a good problem at guard. You know what I mean? Like, this is the thing. I mean, people aren't fond at Bled, but Bled's fast and they want to run.
And he defends.
He drives a lot.
You know, and they have defending guards. That's the thing. Yeah. So I think that this is actually you know, they moved in the right direction, you know, in a scenario. And then I'm curious to see how Adams and Zion plays together. But I still think it's an upside from Jackson Hayes or whoever they would have signed as a filler, you know?
Yeah.
Because Adams is young. He can pass. He has a soft touch.
My question is, Zach, when you're beginning to talk yourself into the Pelicans, what does that mean? Where do you see them?
Like, I was like easily in the mix for the 8th seed. Whereas once they had traded Drew, I was like, oh, man, all right, I guess
okay. You know,
they're like 12, 13, somewhere in there.
This is why I kind of hate the play-in game, because now it's 10 teams that make the playoffs.
Hate the play-in game?
Kind of in that sense. It's like now it's 10 teams. Now it's two-thirds of the league makes the playoffs. So it's that's my real problem with the play-in game. Yes, I get it. I have my own issues. But yeah,
it would really suck to see Zion in a winner-takes-all scenario.
Yeah, it'd be awful to have teams gunning for wins instead of just like, you know, punting on the season a month and a half left.
You know, no, listen, we have all the whole regular season's the play-in game to me, is in that sense. But that's whatever. I get all the reasons why we have it. But in that sense, it's like, so now when we evaluate teams, okay, is this a play-in team or is this a real playoff team?
Yeah. Okay. So now, we have another thing to assess instead of like, is this team going to punt in March? Well, I guess March doesn't mean anything anymore, but in a normal season, March.
I do hope that's the side benefit of this, is that we do get a race for the 10 seed to try to get a shot at the playoffs. Like, I really do hope that happens. I don't think it's going to necessarily, but I do hope it happens because,
man, you know how many owners want playoff revenue?
I know. But there are also teams that are just going to tank anyway, and they don't want to ruin that tank. And especially the next few drafts, I hope that we get that race for the 10 seed. I think it will add some excitement. I'm with you. I think New Orleans is probably one of the play-in teams in the West. They're going to have a hell of a running game with Adams and Zion. I mean, good luck doing anything inside against that team. And they should own the glass. This was actually a big thing with Zion last year. I didn't think he rebounded nearly as well as he did in college. And, you know, Mo and I talked a lot about how bad his defense was. Well, the excuses are out the window now. Presumably, he'll be in shape. He'll be healthy. He's going to have a solid center. And, you know, I've got my opinions on Steven Adams right now. I want to see what he looks like under normal circumstances. He did not look good physically in the bubble. I thought he looked at least a step slow. And
yeah, I'm
trying to throw that out. Yeah, I'm trying to throw that out. It's just tough because it's the last thing I saw. So I want to see what he looks like with these guys. But also, I want to see Zion at the five, because I think when you've got a team like this with these athletes, Eric Bledsoe, get that guy out in transition.
Yo, get Stan's him, only get doing him running. That if he puts his ass in defense like that.
I know.
Everything, everything comes down to Zion for the Pelicans, yep. Man. Everything. And we know he's going to be a dunk and layup machine. He's the closest thing we've seen to Shaq since Shaq in that regard. But can he play defense? Can he be in shape? Can he stay on the court for more than however many minutes per game? Can he be available? Those are the questions that are going to define what the Pelicans do, because the rest of the supporting cast is fine. They have competent NBA players everywhere, but they need that guy. They need Zion to be a huge, huge plus. And I think he has that potential if he stays in shape and Stan Van Gundy can convince him to play a little bit of defense. He played some defense in Duke. It wasn't like he was like a total non-factor.
It's easier to play
Duke
defense against the ninth man from Boston College.
That's fair, but like he tried, which was an upgrade over what he did in New Orleans. And maybe that's
because he was also in better shape.
I think college, he never right? had his feet yeah. under him last season. I honestly believe that. He looked so different from an engagement standpoint as a rookie than he did in college and anything else I've seen. So I think he just, you know, having the knee issue, the conditioning issue, then obviously the hiatus didn't help him. And then he missed time. Remember, he had to leave the bubble. I just think he never got his feet under him. And I'm excited to see what this guy can do, you know, healthy and ready to go. It just sucks that we've got these abbreviated camps.
So what did we make before we go? The health and safety protocol. I skimmed through it. I'll be honest, I didn't read the whole. I know some people are like, I read the whole 134 pages. Like, why? Someone's going to break it down for you.
Yeah.
You do The Athletic.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a good plan, you know?
I guess.
But you look at what's happening in football right now.
Yeah.
You look at what happened in baseball. Like, at least they're building in.
Yeah.
Like, Trey, the fact that they're only releasing the first half of the season schedule, and then they're like, yeah, we'll figure it out later.
Well,
for
here's
the
thing
half.
That's interesting. They're starting the week off with individual workouts. Like, that should be already a sign of, like, here we go. Yeah. Let's give it a shot. And then they meet, like, another week for group workouts, and it's just kind of like, this is an NBA league. Like, this is a league, you know, like, the main league, not the D League, I mean, a G League or any B level type stuff. This is the main league trying to figure this out and trying to get guys to even be disciplined. Think about if we were to not mind our business and go on Instagram and look at family pictures of Thanksgiving and how many people are in the house. Do you think guys are really about to lock in and live in a bubble? I think the guys that really want to do it is probably Chris Paul, LeBron, like where he has just his own little pod or apartment where he just like has no contact with anybody. And
Trey, I saw someone I know on Instagram go to Vegas for Thanksgiving weekend. What are we doing?
Hey, man, the priorities are different, man. People need to get their fix. It is what it is. But, you know, as far as they're even testing cardio now, too, for heart stuff, because it can affect that long term now, what they're finding out. So, yes, I mean, I hope as a fan and as a person who covers the game that we do successfully make it through 72 games. But I can see the cases happening, man, just like football.
Yeah.
You have to expect the cases to happen. This isn't the bubble. To, yeah. You're going to have this. You're going to have outbreaks. Like, there's just, you can't have this many people, this much traveling and things like that. This is going to happen. I think the NBA is smart enough to have that understanding. Did I see somewhere where they're going to have, like, teams are all required to have, like, contact tracers and all sorts of different specialists and things around? So, you know, I think they're trying. It's just get ready, folks. It's going to be crazy in that sense. Like,
there's also a degree of a bailout coming. You know what I mean? I think that a little bit of their factoring in is we got this vaccine rolling out. And I wouldn't be surprised to see NBA players at the front of the line.
Yeah.
Baseball is going to get lucky with this too, because, you know, they're planning to come back March, April. Mm-hmm. And so my hope is that the deployment of the vaccine makes all of this stuff moot. It would be fantastic.
That would be great.
Right. For everybody. Like, that would be the Christmas present we all need. I really hope that the NBA is still going to take it seriously, because, like, it's not a panacea. There's going to, you know, like, we're not going to just have the vaccine come out on a Monday and everybody's able to go to games on a Tuesday.
Right. Yeah.
And so the plan looks fine. I mean, it's as good as any plan that any other league has put together. They know they're probably going to run into positive cases and you just have to be able to take those bumps and move on. But it does seem like they're going to be safer than some of the other professional sports have been. So
I think we're going to see like back to back to backs in that second half of the season as they try to squeeze these games in.
Oh, it's going
to
get wild.
Yeah. I think it's going to be pretty rough. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Basket Buds, the Athletic NBA Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you rate, review, do all that stuff. Unsubscribe, resubscribe, all that crap to juice the logarithm. What else we got? The restricted area. That's what I meant to plug. The restricted area. This week, Wozni Lambert and I go down the rise and fall of one Russell Westbrook. So we'll get into that. It's a very fun episode. And make sure you're checking out Tampering, Hoops Adjacent, Point of Contention, Nerdish She Wrote. Make sure you're checking all the writing. I think it's like $1 a month right now for The Athletic. There was some glitch of a deal that happened for Black Friday. So I think that's still going. Make sure you get yourself a subscription, because that is pretty much giving it away. I think I saw someone say it's cheaper than any textbook you'll get if you're a student. So if you're a journalist,
students read textbooks.
They buy them.
Students read Jack Harper.
I didn't. Look at me.
Yes, look at you, Zach.
Yeah, okay. So maybe read those textbooks. But also subscribe to The Athletic. Make sure you check out all the other shows, No Dunks, all the team-specific shows right here on The Athletic Podcast Network. For Trey, for Dave, for Jay, for Mo, I'm Zach Harper. Keep it locked in on The Athletic.